This is Mae Brussel, and this is the second half of World Watchers, program number 821. Our new director of the CIA, Mr. William Webster, who was FBI director until a few months ago, had a particular liking for using mafia people in sting operations and working with them. And one of the examples was just 2 years ago when it surfaced a large article in the San Francisco Examiner, many that followed it, titled "Ex-Mobster Tied to FBI's Iran Sting." And the article says a Bay Area man with a known mafia background apparently was involved in the FBI sting operation to block illegal arms shipments to Iran. Tony Romano, a key figure in the Sunni Golf Course scandal in 1974, with a lengthy record of fraud, larceny, tax evasion, has been identified by two defendants in a case to charge with conspiracy of shipments to Iran. According to the FBI affidavit, Paul Sechola, I mentioned him before, S-J-E-K-L-O-C-H-A, he's also known as Paul Cutter, and other defendants were going to fly missiles from the United States to Iran. They were to be used on the country's border with the war with Iraq. The United States Arms Control Act bans all arms sales to Iran. This was 1985, before people knew that the president was sending them. Until the late 60s, Romano was a mafia lieutenant with Stefano Magradino family in Buffalo, New York. Romano was the mafia leader Salvatore Samperi. He was also tried in Buffalo with connection to major jewel thefts. The government used him as their special agent, and he was to frame Paul Cutter dash Sechola. He uses both names, and this same person, this Romano, was also an associate of Jimmy the Weasel, who just lost his security clearance and protection from the Justice Department that they give if you testify against certain drug or mafia people, and now Pratriano is out on his own. Romano was involved with persons in Florida, and Sechola, as I say, uses the name Paul Cutter. They were sending more than $6 million of weapons to Iran. And Paul Cutter is a member of JINSA, the Israeli organization, J-I-N-S-A. And he was arrested with an Israeli, several Israeli generals and with U.S. Army Colonel Wayne Gillespie. And it turns out that they have overturned this case. I believe Paul Cutter-Sechola is out of the case because it turned out that Ronald Reagan's secret team, Mr. Secord and Hakim, were sending arms to Iran. So they had to stop these people. And another member of their partnership was Mr. Cyrus Hashimi, who was killed in July, that next July, in London. And these people were framed, literally framed, by William Webster to stop these people from sending arms to Iran. They thought that they were working with the Central Intelligence Agency, with the United States government, and Paul Cutter also worked with two retired generals in Paris that were sending arms to Iran. And Romano told Paul Cutter, if you don't go through with it, your family is dead. So they went through with sending or making the gestures about to send the arms to Iran, and then the FBI had them arrested, similar to the Abscam operation, and then it turned out that when the arrest took place, Edwin Meese went to the Justice Department and said, I want to handle this case myself. He didn't want the Justice Department to handle it because it involved the persons working with one of the men arrested was Mr. Evans, the attorney for Khashoggi. They were working with the identical people that Secord and Hakim were working with, a whole group. And so Romano, the crime figure, was brought in to stop them. And they were stopped by court orders and arrests. And then this was in August of 85. And by October of 86, the whole Iran-Contra story started to break open. And it's interesting that the FBI used a organized crime figure to arrest people that were doing what the White House was doing so that the White House wouldn't have competition with them. They know where to find the mafia when they want them, and they know how to cut them loose when they don't need them. There's a new book coming out by Jonathan Quitney, a wonderful writer for the Wall Street Journal. It's called The Crimes of Patriots, The True Tale of Dope, Dirty Money, and the CIA. It's published by W.W. Norton, and he was on television last week talking about the book, and the book goes into many areas, including the Nugenhand Bank. He's an expert at that, and the role of our high military and admirals and generals and the Australian connections, but then the book has a lot more. He's great at that, and he also knows about the Southeast Asian drug connections and the P2 and Francesco Pazienza and the Italian connections of the drugs. So this will be a good book to read. I don't have it yet, but I want to indicate why I believe that Mrs. Reagan, as I said last week, doesn't want to go down in history remembered for nothing at all, and the peace overtures, if they worked in Central America, might help to cover up some of these drug articles. There was an article this past week and in these times titled North Security Officer is Linked to Alleged Arms Network. And this has to do with documents that Peter Dale Scott got. He's back there, the author, researcher in Washington. And it has to do with a man named Walter Gold that has a Washington News Network. And he tried to buy influence over Jack Turrell. Turrell is now working with Peter Dale Scott and with a group of people at the International Center for Development Policy. And they got a hold of a document, and Walter Gold had introduced Jack Turrell to his good friend, Mr. Robinette. Robinette is the CIA man that built Ollie North's fence and who was given from $60,000 to $100,000 to try and break up the defendants in the Christic Institute case. And Gold and Robinette offered the two of them to set Mr. Turrell in business. He originally worked with the Contras, broke with the Contras, and is helping the Christic Institute and other researchers back east. So they tried to interfere with the way that Mr. Turrell's life would go and offered him to go into business. And Turrell said that Walter Gold was associated with General John Singlaub. Again, Singlaub comes into this picture. And with Leroy Manor formerly of the Nugenhand Bank in Australia, that involved Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins and Richard Secord and the main defendants of the Christic Institute suit, and also a man named Dennis Suit. And the Atlanta-based operation they have is smuggling weapons, not drugs. But in this story, again, come the people that want to hurt the Christic Institute suit that have all this money, John Singlaub, who's a defendant in the suit. And the allegations of this article is that Walter Gold is on the board of directors of Overseas Press Service. It's a company in Atlanta, Georgia, but it's also a cover. They have another operation that is run that sends weapons overseas. And these are the kinds of weapons that Singlaub, of course, could get to persons to stir up a revolution over there. One of the people mentioned in this article is that Dennis Suit, an Atlanta-based video journalist, who's on the board of Overseas Press Service, and Leroy Manor of Nugenhand Bank, a retired Air Force general who specialized in covert operations, was an officer of the Nugenhand Bank in Australia. He has ties to intelligence operations and narcotic traffickers. Nugenhand Bank was, I guess you'd say, 100% narcotic traffic money. And Jack Turrell, the person who's assisting the Christic, told Peter Dale Scott that the arms smuggling operation, they used a warehouse that belonged to a defunct military armaments corporation owned by Mitchell Werbel III. Now, just several years ago, in 1983, September 83, when I was writing the article on Western Goals and Larry McDonald for Larry Flint, it was Mitchell Werbel who moved into the home of Larry Flint along with G. Gordon Liddy and Gordon Novell, three top men from the Defense Department, so that this operation that is involved Leroy Manor with ties to the intelligence and narcotics traffic, with weapons trafficking, with John Singlaub, is a place where they tried to seduce a primary witness to the Christic suit. And of course, this is where Robinette's money and Secord's money could go to win him to their side. And this article is a small one from In These Times, but it hits the top bases, the drug smuggling, the weapon smuggling, John Singlaub trying to buy off a witness by offering him a good job. And it, again, it hits the bases of the guns and the drugs and Singlaub and Werbel, who was one of the masters of coup d'etat when he was alive. And he has some very good students that have survived him. The San Jose Mercury and Washington Post, it was printed in both, had an article this past May, drug enforcement agents reportedly paid from Swiss accounts. Many of you saw the article. It had to do with the DEA being paid out of Secord and Hakim's accounts, allegedly to find hostages in Lebanon. It also turned that Adolfo Calero had donated $90,000 or so for the hostages. But the interesting part of this article is the fact that the NSC is using drug enforcement agencies and paying them from Swiss banks when Adolfo Calero has been named in the Christic Institute as being one of the people involved with the drug traffic out of Mr. Hall's ranch. And the very people that have been cited as from Vietnam and Southeast Asia and from Bay of Pigs and then in the Central American operations and cocaine operations, that they are working with drug enforcement agent or agents and paying them money, and it's not coming out of the American till. We have plenty of money, CIA money. Casey had all he wanted, and so does the Defense Department and Defense Intelligence Agency. And if they wanted the hostages as a military operation, the DEA didn't have to be paid out of the Swiss banks. But I wonder if there are connections of this DEA, as are any DEA, to the drug traffic themselves, and if this guy wasn't being paid off because the drug stories were beginning to break. Newsday had a long article, April 19th, titled "Syrian Drug Dealer Linked to North's Arms Network." There were smaller articles about this that were repeated in some of the newspapers, but a listener in New York sent me the full copy of the Newsday article by Newt Royce on Ollie North and Secord working with the most notorious and largest drug dealer associated with Syrian drugs. And, of course, Syria and large drugs brings up the name of Henry R. Sand and Stebaum, which is related to these particular people of the enterprise through all kinds of routes that I've decided on the programs before. This article from Newsday said, Lieutenant Colonel North's private arms network purchased 158 tons of assault rifles, ammunition for the Nicaraguan rebels, from Mansur Al-Qassar, a reputed international narcotics smuggler, a terrorist who's linked to the Kili Lora hijacker. That's the only place where you could get arms, you understand? From a man linked to the Kili Lora hijacking, which made Ollie North the great hero of the extreme right, and from narcotics traffickers and terrorists. The arms businesses are mushrooming all over the world, and it could be less obvious if you bought them, say, from Southeast Asia or Japan or the Philippines. But going right to the source of heavy drugs and arms and kidnappings and buying it from them and supporting their operation really seems outrageous. The article says Mansur Al-Qassar, 42, a Syrian, also supplies arms to Abu Abbas, the head of the Palestine Liberation Front Unit and the mastermind of the 1985 Achille Lori hijacking, and also to other Palestinian groups. Ali Qassar was twice arrested in London on narcotic smuggling charges, but of course he got off. Now, Ali North's claim to fame was that he could move swifter than the CIA, that he and Secord, you know, out of NAC had such quick action that they could intercept the plane that took the hijackers when it got to Rome and stopped the people of the Achille Lori, you know, hijacking. Well, what they did, they got a few small fish. One of the primary people fell out of a window and was killed in Rome a few weeks ago. But Abu Abbas was indeed arrested by the people in Rome, and he was released. And he's out free doing whatever drug smuggling or terrorism he wants. The article says the arms were purchased by a company linked to retired Air Force Major Richard Secord and his business associate Albert Hakim. The Ali Qassar family, which includes several brothers, is reputed to be the largest drug and arms-dealing family in Syria. Well, if it's the largest drug family in Syria, it is part of that Henry Arsan operation. When he was arrested in 1982, they described it in Italy. It was 1981, the arrest of Henry Arsan as being the largest drug operation in the world. And at that time, the Stebaum was sending weapons to Iran. And this was linked to the P2. And also to the likes of Michael Ledeen. The money from those operations from Henry Arsan went to the pizza defendants in New York into the Palermo trial that was deposited, good hunk, in Merrill Lynch accounts. And I've done details on the B2 drug connection. So Ollie North and Secord and Hakim have to buy their weapons from this particular outfit. The article says Al-Qassar is a wholesale arms buyer for the PLO, which retails the arms for profit. A U.S. criminal record document rap sheet labels Alcazar as, in big words, terrorist at the top of the page. It claims he had alleged ties to the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine controlled by George Habash. And this is very important. Abu Habash, the man responsible for the killing Laura, who's making the money off the selling us arms, who's a drug dealer, Abu Habash is an associate of Dr. George Habash. Alcazar sold silencers, equipped assassination pistols, rockets, weapons to Libya, Iran, South Yemen, and terrorist organizations in Syria and Lebanon. Now, I'm going to go to the name of Habash in a moment. I'll finish this article and go to George Habash, because I wrote up about George Habash and his group working with Larry McDonald of Western Goals, of the John Birch Society, of a member of the House of Representatives, the man who went down on the KAL 007 in 1983, August 30th of that date, and then Western Goals went into the hands of Carl Spitz Channel. Now, Carl Spitz Channel is the money person who distributes the funds for the enterprises that Ollie North designates for the Contras and so forth. So if Larry McDonald's funds and connections went to George Habash, going back to when I wrote that article in fall of 1983, and now the Secord Hakeem North team not only worked with Spitz Channel, who took over Western Goals from Larry McDonald, but they have the same network of drug dealers and weapon dealers and put money in the hands of those people, or are they continuing any kind of payoff drug traffic, vice versa, that they have to continue this business? The article says Alcazar was one of the two arms dealers who acted as a middleman in the 2.3 million ransom by the French government in June 86 for two Frenchmen held by terrorists in Beirut. Alcazar's tons of arms include AK-47 assault rifles, ammunition. They were put aboard a Panamanian freighter that Secord and Hakeem rented called the Erie, E-E-R-I-E, which steamed out of Poland. The city is called Szczecin, Z-C-Z-E-C-I-N, in July 10th, 1986. That's when the Erie left. The Erie was purchased by Albert Hakeem through a Panamanian shell company that was set up by North and Spitz Channel and Hakeem called the Dolmy Business. Well, the ships came from Dolmy. The Danish ship came from Dolmy. The arms were purchased from another Panamanian company, Energy Resources. Now, Dolmy and Energy are both out of Switzerland, Hakeem's accounts with Willard Zucker, but they used two companies, one for the weapons and one for the ship. The arms came out of the Syrian arms terrorist, and the ship came from Denmark and was purchased by Hakeem. The arms company arms were purchased from the Energy Resources, and many of you have seen that on the Ollie North charts, owned by Stanford Technology Training Corporation in California. That's Hakeem out here in California, part of the Stanford Technology Training. And of course, out in California, the closeness of Western Goals to Ronald Reagan's administration and the network of that group to Edwin Meese, I had detailed 4 hours on World Watchers going a long, long way back. The Danish shipping agent, Tom Parlow, played a central role in the arms deal. Hakeem was the financial masterminder. Secord arranged the logistics. And Hakeem had been a business partner with Willard Zucker for 10 years, and they handled the financing of this operation. Alcazar lives in Vienna, Austria, which is very convenient. Secord and Hakeem have their operations, Stanford Technology Trading Group, besides in California, in Los Gatos, in Vienna, Virginia. Of course, you realize that would be just a coincidence. Helene Von Damm, who was Ronald Reagan's secretary in California for 8 years, appointment secretary, and then was there in Washington for 6 years through the transition team, making appointments of hiring these kind of people before she became the ambassador of Vienna, was part of that Transcomputer International that I mentioned earlier, von Bolschwing's network, the international imaging that Hakeem bought, and then she went on to be ambassador in Vienna, where Alcazar lives in Vienna. And there was one article that I had on the air about 4 or 5 months ago about Albert Hakeem and weapons in or safe houses in Vienna that Helene Von Damm helped him with. So it's interesting that Hakim has a partner where he picks up a person to sell him weapons from Poland who deals in narcotics in Syria and in Lebanon and sells weapons and narcotics to one of the world's largest drug dealers and arms dealers with their offices in Vienna, Austria. The article goes on, another mysterious arms dealer was involved with the deal in Marbella, that's in the Caribbean, Paul Craddock, C-R-A-D-O-C, who runs a firm called Caribbean International Airways. Craddock is alleged to receive financing for his arms from Adnan Khashoggi, the Saudi Arabian who helped finance U.S. arms shipments to Iran. Craddock was described as Khashoggi's man, and some people in the Khashoggi operation were denying that. Ali Kassar was the middleman in the deal of these weapons. He arranged it with a company, a Polish agency, under the foreign ministry that controls foreign trade. Then he sold the weapons to North's group. Ali Kassar was described by a former intelligence officer as a major buyer, a buyer of consequence from Senzin, C-E-N-Z-I-N, which is the Polish agency and offices in Paris. Once the area left Poland with the Eastern Bloc weapons purchased by the Syrian arms dealers who supplied arms to Abul Abbas, the PL unit that masterminded the Kilolora. Once all that happened, it steamed into the Portugal town of Setubal and picked up 200 more tons of arms. This was arranged by Theodore Shackley, famous in Southeast Asia, Nguyen Han Bank, and in Saigon and so forth, in part of the cocaine operations and working with Secord and Hakim in this operation from Portugal. The arms from Portugal included landmines, grenades, machine guns, purchased from a Portuguese firm called Defex. Alcazar used Portugal as a transshipment point, and he works a lot in Portugal as well as in Vienna, Austria. Financial problems started when the ship was loaded up with the weapons. North Network expected Congress to resume the financing of the arms of the Contras before October. This is, again, I'm reading from the article from Newsday, April 19, 1987. That money hadn't yet arrived. Some 358 tons remained aboard the Iria, which stayed in Portugal for almost 2 months. Now, let me just interject here that when Secord again was testifying and North was testifying, their great forte is that we are better than the CIA. We move fast. We can do anything. We can get things done. You spend so long with your bureaucracy. Well, look what happens to their ship. These bumbling people have to go to drug dealers and smugglers, the world's most renowned hijackers, to get something. And now the ship is sitting around in Portugal for 2 months. In September, the ship went to Cherbourg and unloaded the cargo on the port's ammunition dock. September 13th, a second ship came along the Iceland Saga and picked up the weapons. A week later, September 20th, and sailed for Puerto Barrios in Guatemala. At this point, Admiral Poindexter ordered Oliver North to pressure CIA Casey to make things right for Secord. So while they're testifying on the stand about how terrible the CIA is, it can't get anything done, when they're stuck in the mud and can't get the ship going and can't get the money they're supposed to have, and goodness knows what they did with it or how they expected to move this around, then they go to the CIA, the very CIA that Casey had to go beyond, and Secord and Hakim and North went beyond because it couldn't function. But then they call on the CIA to help bail us out, so they go to the CIA. So the CIA agrees to help them out. They agree to buy the weapons through an American arms dealer named James Atwood and get the money that is needed for the weapons. And so they offer $1.4 million. And one source said the arms had a retail value of $5.5 million, and Hakim and Secord had been trying to get more than $2 million for the shipment. The Iceland Saga abandoned its Puerto Rico in it abandoned itself in Puerto Barrios, and instead then it steamed into North Carolina. It hasn't gotten to the Contras yet. October the 8th, it arrived at the Army Sunny Point Munitions Depot, unloaded the arms, went to Wilmington, where ammunition was taken off. The arms have since been delivered to the Contras by freighter, bailed out by the Central Intelligence Agency. The ammunition was retained by Atwood, a retired military officer. They're all CIA, ex-CIA or ex-Defense Department, who runs a business out of Savannah, Georgia. His profit from the deal will come when he sells the 3 million rounds of 7.62 millimeter ammunition. It reminds me of the 7.62 Mannlicher Carcano that allegedly was used to kill John Kennedy. So Secord and North testified that their secret teams were better than anybody else's. They could get things done. And not only didn't it work, but they used people that were marked top terrorists on the intelligence reports. They worked with one of the largest narcotic dealers in Syria. And all this roundabout transaction seems a little complicated, working with a person who was responsible for the Achille Lauro and so forth. And a lot of questions have to be asked about what were they doing in that part of the world and with the drug enforcement agents. And was it arms they were working on, really, or was there more involved I don't know how they work with these drug dealers, but it seems very mysterious to get so tangled and come up with so little working at such a danger point in case people knew that's who they were working with. And, of course, once it came out, people didn't even seem too concerned about it. Now, when I drew that picture with Larry McDonald's face on it, the Larry McDonald pie that was in the February 84 Hustler, I referred to Robert Byron Watson's testimony or affidavit on the role of Larry McDonald working with George Habash out of Lebanon, the Georgia connections to Lebanon, and to his brother Fuad Habash and the Nazi connections in Chile, involved with the coup in Chile and the takeover of the government there. And I wrote about the role of the Habashes in funding the campaign, allegedly working with Larry McDonald, that money was coming in and that it was helping his being elected or put into the till of whatever politics, far-right politics, he wanted. In fact, I wrote, Larry McDonald's unsavory Chilean connection was exposed by Robert Byron Watson and presented to attorneys of the House Select Committee on Assassinations with alleged affidavit detailing Larry McDonald's dealings with Fuad Habash Ansar in Santiago de Chile. In fact, this affidavit, Watson claimed that Fuad Habash is the brother of Arab terrorist leader Dr. George Habash of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. This is an organization that is said to work with our CIA as it arranges Arab terrorist murders around the world. And, of course, the Achille Lauro was an example. And the mindset of these people was to take the Jew, there were many Jews on the boat, take the Jew in the wheelchair, dump him in the water. And Ollie North works closely, allegedly, with anti-terrorist groups that I think are agent provocateur groups to create terrorist situations so that he and his ilk can have more power and muscle. Now, just a few moments to run down some articles about the Iran-Contra drug connections that are coming from the right, left, and middle, and not any particular way in the newspaper. Spotlight has an article by Victor Marchetti, who wrote The Cult of Intelligence, the CIA and the Cult of Intelligence, a two-page article, U.S. Spies Face Drug Charge in Iran-Contra Arms Scandal. And it's got a list of the defendants from the Christic Institute and a long two-page article on the Christic Institute and their suit and their drug traffic. Bravo, a magazine or newspaper from the American Veterans Organization, has a 4 or 5 page article about the cover-up of the heroin coming in from Southeast Asia, from Kung Sa, the discovery of Bo Gritz, and the road to heroin heaven. Also, there is a news release by Representative Rangel, Charles Rangel, Democrat of New York, objecting to the fact that the Washington Post lied about the House investigation, and he accused them of covering up by printing an article. This letter was July 22, 1987, where he said, four aspects of your story, July 27th, regarding our committee's July 21st briefing on possible contra-drug smuggling relationships concerns me because you wrongly convey the impression that the committee reached the conclusion that no evidence exists linking the Contras to drug smuggling. First, your headline, quotes, Hill panels find no evidence linking Contras to drug smuggling, end quote, is misleading because it says we drew one conclusion, while in fact we reached quite a different one. It is true, as you quote me, that we did not receive any evidence that could show Contra leadership was involved in drug smuggling. However, we did not conclude that there was no evidence of Contra involvement in drug smuggling. Rather, based on the information presented, The committee agreed there's a strong need for further congressional investigation into the allegations made. The committee agreed to turn over all material we gathered to the House Judiciary Committee on Crime, which has jurisdiction and has been conducting an extensive investigation. The members agreed to cooperate in every way. Secondly, the opening paragraph of the story says, we've been investigating allegations that Contra leaders were in drug smuggling, like the headline. This, too, is inaccurate, but hereby omission. We have been investigating whether any elements of the Contras, not just the leadership, but equally important, the investigating the U.S. federal agencies, acquiescence and the covering up of the investigation, we're investigating that, and he objected that they're making it look like they found no evidence of drug trafficking to support the Contra cause. My time is up. I wanted to do a lot more. There's about 20 good articles out on the Contras and drugs this past month, and maybe I'll have time next week or continue later. Maybe you're seeing it in your newspapers. There are a lot of articles, and the Senate and House are pursuing it, so don't give up if Lawrence Welsh's committee turned their back on the subject, but the Senate and House are investigating these more and more every day. This is Mae Bressel. I'll be back with you next week, and we'll continue and maybe, hopefully, do 1 hour on what is going on in the Philippines.